You're listening to A Lump in the Road. This is the diary of my sister, cancer, and me.
It's the 23rd of February, and the last time we spoke, Larissa, was, I think, a couple of weeks ago. 30th of January, was it?
Feels like a very long time ago.
It actually does, because unlike most weeks, I've not seen you a lot in the last week or so,
no,
have I?
No,
but there's been loads going on socially and stuff like that, hasn't there?
Yes, that is true. Yeah, it's been a busy one.
And a happy birthday to Beatrice.
For tomorrow. I can't believe I've got an 18-year-old.
I know, that is a bit crazy, isn't
it?
Wait till my two are 18. Oh my goodness. Right. So let's have a chat then about where we are at the moment, because mm-hmm. last time we spoke, you were waiting for a consultation on the 14th. Happy Valentine's Day. And in my notes, all I've got written is Mr. Mistopheles. So I've been completely around my goldfish bowl once. So fill us in on what that was about.
So basically, yeah, magical Mr. Mistopheles is all about micro metastases, if you remember. And that is where they found cancerous cells in my sentinel lymph nodes when they did the biopsy, that were over 0.2 millimetres in size but under 2 full millimetres in size. And I had got my knickers in a real twist.
Yeah.
Well, because basically when I was given my histology report, the consultant told me that it was a really good outcome and that the micrometastases was nothing to worry about. And on face value at that appointment, I was absolutely over the moon and delighted and literally walked out of the room skipping. But
because that was to do with your prognosis,
yes,
over the next 5 years, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and the percentage chance, yes, of you being around, etc.
Yes, absolutely. And they do it over 5 and then 10 years. So there's, yeah, two different measures that they run. So I was all very okay with that at the last meeting. But in between then and the following weekend, I don't know if you recall, I received a letter from the pathology team, from the breast unit and the pathology team, giving me this score on a Nottingham prognostic index.
Now, scores aren't always important, Larissa, are they? But for you, the score is very important.
I love the fact that you bring your children up to believe that it's the taking part that counts. And I'm like, it's totally
Larissa,
not.
Some people do believe that.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the score.
Losers. Anyway, so the score is all important. And it gave me this score of 3.3 on the MPI. And when I researched how this score had been made up and what it meant, it confused me and threw me into a lot of self-doubt. Because part of the way that they make the score, give you an indexed number, is to add different points based on the size of your tumour, the grade of your tumour, whether it has spread to the lymph nodes and whether there is any metastases. And micrometastases is allocated a full point. So the higher your index number, the worse your prognosis is. And I don't know if you recall, and I know that at the time it was a little bit funny, but I wasn't in the excellent category. I was only in the
fancy. Has that ever happened to you before in your entire life?
Yeah, with cancer. I'm not loving this at all.
That's true.
So, yeah. So I was only in the, you know, good category. So I was really, really keen to speak with the oncologist on the 14th to figure out what that all meant, really, I suppose.
Because I remember chatting about it at the time and saying maybe they haven't taken into account the future treatment,
yeah,
and everything that you are you still have to do.
Yeah, so that being that radiotherapy and also the systemic hormone treatment.
So was that the case then?
Yeah, it is really. That is based on if you only have had surgery and based on the tumour that you have had, this is the prognosis. So, yeah, it's completely sitting outside of context. And as far as I can understand, it is used to indicate whether they need to do a different type of test, which is called an oncocyte test, which tests the gene status and within your cancer, and it then gives you or the surgical team a score which leads them to determine what type of treatment you then may go on to need. So it will tell you whether chemotherapy is likely to be of any benefit to you or whether your path is radiotherapy or whether it is just hormone therapy, so on and so forth. And so it is a really important index, because if you score low or high on it, they either do or don't do this test. And it also affects, obviously, the prognosis that they give you. So it's all a bit of a melting pot of algorithms and calculations, but it is important and it is quite worrying.
Did you ask them why they didn't mention it at previous appointments? Because you knew about every other result that was coming back apart from that.
I didn't ask them, no, but I'm not entirely sure that many people, I'm sure they care, but, you know, a lot of people are more able to take things on face value than I am. And I'm really aware of that. I'm not very good at just accepting things.
Unless you understand absolutely everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. And now I do. I feel like I understand as much as a layperson can, because clearly I'm not a doctor, despite our...
are you sure 100% now?
Sure, yeah. I know that, and we are only joking when I say that. And, of course, all of this is based on my understanding and interpretation of what the medics are saying to me. So please don't take this as my advice or, you know, 100% gospel, because it's just my interpretation of what everyone is saying to me. But, yeah, once I think I know... and I'm very clear and I can see the logic behind it, I tend to be okay. So shall I tell you what the oncologist said? I mean, she was fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, give us what the outcome of that appointment was.
Yeah, so basically I went into her with a massive file. And, you know, when you sit down and you think, and I'm sure she looked at me and went, oh, my God, here we go. But she was so polite and so lovely. She was literally younger than we are. She was younger than we are. So much younger than
we are. You're nearly 50 though, aren't you?
No, we can't do that one again. She was fantastic, but I did say, I'm really sorry, but I've got quite a few questions. And she was really reassuring and basically just said, this is the appointment to ask them in. So I then launched firstly into the micrometastases, because I think everything after that I could deal with once I'd got this one sorted in my head. And what she basically said was that the micrometastases has to be thought of as node negative. Okay, so from an anxiety point of view, from a treatment point of view, from an oncology point of view, they view it as node negative. Okay, so you just have to accept that. Now, okay, I can't quite get my head around the logic of that, because it has moved. There are still cells that are away from that initial tumour. But at some point, you've got to accept what they're telling you. And for me, this has to be now. So she said, view it as node negative. So I obviously asked her about this MPI score and why then, if they view it as node negative, why it's given a score on that index. And she then said, in her opinion, it shouldn't have a score on the MPI. So it should not even be there. So what she then said was, so if you look at your score of 3.3, a whole point is given to whether it's in your node or not, and it's classed as in your node for the MPI. So she said, if it were me and it was up to me, in fact, up to most oncologists, that wouldn't be there. So my score actually should be 2.3. Which makes it...
Does that bring you excellent? Are you excellent again?
I'm excellent again.
Can a high five? Right, there's a high five. Okay, good.
But that, it doesn't... I mean, obviously, I'm pleased that that is what she said. You just need to settle. And, well, I needed to let that settle. And I really needed to trust her and make that decision to trust her, because I can't find any more information out about it. I've asked the question directly. I've asked it from the side. I've asked it from another side, and I've looked at it all ways around. So at some point I've got to accept that that's how they're looking at it.
Okay. Well, that's great news, and I'm really happy. Yes. And I can see a physical change in how you feel about it.
So absolutely.
That is great. And it's good for you to have it settled in your mind.
Yes.
So moving forward then, what does that mean with regards to your treatment with the radiotherapy and the hormone therapy and stuff?
So basically what that means is that they are viewing my cancer. I feel like I've kind of gone back to the beginning again. You know, when they were saying this is all really positive and it's small and it's this, that and the other. I feel like I'm back there again, where everything feels like good news. But I did feel for a month or so in between the 13th of Jan and the 14th of Feb like I was in a bit of a black hole, whereas now I feel really positive again. So she basically said that there would have been no point, and there is no point, in doing the Oncotype DX test, which is the test they have to send to America, because I would have scored very low on it, bearing in mind my type of cancer, the receptor status, etc. She said there would be no benefit to chemotherapy at all. They would just have more side effects than it was worthwhile. But that they still wanted to go ahead and do the radiotherapy. And I have to say as well that they've already started the hormone therapy, which, you know, I think we should probably talk about in a little bit more detail, because that's been an interesting journey.
Yes, it has. Do you want to explain that for us now?
So hormone therapy is a systemic treatment for cancer, which they hope to use, in my case, to prevent the recurrence of breast cancer, either in the area of my breast or elsewhere throughout my body. And there are two different types of hormone therapy that I could have had. And it's really important that we get the right one, but it is based on my menopausal status. So because I had been on HRT from January last year, I was unsure of when my last period was. I don't know if we talked, I think we did talk about this before. So I'd had a period in April, just shortly before I'd had the Myrina coil fitted as part of my, the progesterone part of my HRT. So I couldn't say for sure, because it stopped my periods, whether I'd had one since then. So anyway, to cut a very long story short, they had to do a blood test to determine my menopausal status. And even when my lovely doctor was saying, we're going to do a blood test to determine this, I was thinking, I'm sure, based on what I know from Louise Newson at the Newson Clinic, where I went initially, I'm sure I know that when you are going through this point of life, your hormones fluctuate on a daily basis. So there is no definitive blood test to determine whether you are peri, mid, or postmenopausal. Anyway, I didn't say anything because clearly I'm not a doctor, but you know when you know. So I should have just said, I don't think this is going to determine it 100%. So anyway, I did have that test, and he prescribed me a medication called anastrozole, which is for postmenopausal women. So he read the results to assume that I was postmenopause. So they put me on the anastrozole, and then when I got to this appointment, the consultant, the lady that I saw at that appointment, basically said, look, I've reviewed these results, and she reiterated everything I thought about the blood test.
Did you sit there smugly nodding, or did you say, that's what I thought?
I did say, you know, that's what I thought, but I didn't want to labour that point because she was already off on a trail, and she basically said that they wanted to change the hormone therapy to a drug called tamoxifen, because she believed that I was perimenopausal still. So they've changed me to that drug, and they both do different things. So the main job of both of them is to make sure that in my particular type of cancer, which is estrogen and progesterone positive, it's mainly to ensure that there is very little or no estrogen circulating to my cells, any cell of any type.
So everything that you needed to make you more normal during menopause last year, and I can say this because I know, because I'm on it myself now, has been taken away.
Totally taken away. And in fact, also, not just taken away, as in the therapy of HRT has been taken away, but it plunges you into a chemical menopause faster, because they obviously, they want to be belt and braces. They want to make sure that estrogen is not getting to your cells by any means necessary.
And of course, you'll take that over,
of course you will.
Know,
yeah,
the alternative.
You will.
But has that been tricky for you?
Well, I don't know. Well, I'm going to say no. It's not been as bad as I thought it was going to be. But I was on anastrozole for 2 of the 4 weeks. And now I've been on tamoxifen for 8 days. And there have been symptoms. They both do different jobs. So tamoxifen, which I'll talk about because I'm on it now. Tamoxifen basically acts like estrogen within the body. So it attaches itself to cells, any cells within your body, and then effectively blocks the spot where real estrogen could have attached itself to your body. So if you imagine a pie, and then a quarter of that is taken up with a space for an estrogen hormone signal, effectively the tamoxifen will sit in that quarter of the pie piece, so the estrogen bit can't sit there.
So it's a big old faker.
It is a faker. It's a placebo. Well, it basically acts as a stopper. It blocks. So that's what tamoxifen does. But the side effects of that, I have read, are quite dramatic. Although I have to say, so far, I have only experienced fatigue, and then a few more intimate side effects, mainly relating to dryness around the vagina and vulva area, which I've managed to find a remedy for in a medication called Replenz. So if there's anybody out there looking for a non-hormone moisturiser for those areas, that's one that is recommended. So, yeah, I mean, the other side effects I am aware of are related to depression, low mood, just really horrible off the edge of a cliff stuff.
But you are doing loads of things to combat that, and you had intended to anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, with regards to you being an active person and getting back to your normal routine, have you been doing that, and has, you know, is it effective?
Yes, I have. I've been back at the gym since actually the day we went for this appointment. So I go to a gym locally, THQ, which is about transforming your body and losing body fat and promoting the growth of lean muscles. And the trainers there, the guy who owns this gym, Matt, is absolutely brilliant.
Oh, do you know, I hear this every single day. I'm sorry, Matt, this is, you know, but my husband's having a bromance with you, my brother-in-law is, my sister. Sister is.
There's Matt, and actually I have to say Brandon as well.
Yeah,
they are super, super guys.
Yeah, I do feel like I know them by proxy because I literally hear about them daily. So,
oh, bless their little hearts. No, they're absolutely fantastic, and they are a brilliant gym. They do exactly what it says on the tin. They help you lose body fat and develop lean muscle. So that's been brilliant. And Matt and Brandon have both been working with me very closely to get me back into the routine of going to the gym, whereby I'm doing same exercises as most of the other people there, but just a very gentle introduction. Although it's quite funny because I clearly want to go faster than...
No, not you. Do you know best as well?
Of course I know
have
best.
Have they asked you to, for, you know, if you would like
I'm
to be employed
there?
I'm
surprised they haven't asked me to be a trainer.
To open your own THQ.
Oh, God, no, I don't think I could do with all of those early mornings. But yeah, so I'm back at the gym three times a week, which is really fantastic. I'm also walking 10,000 steps a day because I have been... I've linked into a really fabulous Instagram account of Julia Bradbury, who you may know as the TV broadcaster. She's a naturist. She had breast cancer a couple of years ago. And for anybody else looking for additional information, she's been a really good source of inspiration and information for me. And I think actually, in fact, I don't think I know that she had her... She documented her journey through breast cancer. I think there was an ITV programme, which you can get on ITVX if you want to, if you're interested, about her mastectomy and her recovery, etc., etc. Anyway, so I've been linked in with her for a couple of weeks now, and... You know, she talks a lot about getting back to normality, exercising, eating properly, walking, moving immediately after you have had food so that you don't have glucose spikes in your body, which in turn can cause inflammation, which in turn can cause your cytokines to go mental. And these are all the triggers potentially for cancer recurrence or development in the first place. So I've been walking lots, loved being out in nature. I mean, I think that's really cathartic for anybody with or without cancer. I've also adopted a new morning routine. So I've been getting up a bit earlier, so 15 minutes earlier, so that I can do lots of mobility exercises. So I've got 13 exercises that I run through, just basic things like shoulder rolls backwards and shoulder rolls forwards. You know, really bog standard stuff that if anybody wants more information on, they're very welcome to ask me and I'll share. And also some breath work as well, just trying to get my head in the right place. So I do that. And then I've also been doing scar massage every day and massaging my breast, because you know, that really has helped with keeping that whole area supple. Although it started off and it was absolutely disgusting. I hated touching it.
I know, oh. You had a real thing about it. It made you cringe a bit, didn't it?
It was a bit, it was a bit nauseating.
Right. Did you feel like you were touching somebody else?
I did, yeah, I did. For a while. But what it's really done is it's helped. And I don't know whether it's the reason, but it certainly helped for me, the sensory feelings return back to normal.
Yeah.
So now, although it's still not my favourite job in the world, I massage it for 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes at night. And I would absolutely recommend listening to a podcast or watching something on your phone.
Something to distract you.
Yeah, whilst your 10 minutes are ticking away, set your timer, put something on your phone, put your earphones in, or, you know, whatever you do, but don't sit and watch the clock as you massage away. But it's really helped. So the scar now is still very pink, but it's flat and it's all starting to look remarkable. From the front, you would never know that I've got a completely reconstructed right breast. I'm so impressed.
But I do also feel like you've begun to, you know, make peace with it as well.
Yes.
And it's like almost, my husband said, I think she wears it like a badge of honour when she's at the gym.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's great because, you know, it's something you've been through and hopefully, fingers crossed, have conquered, but are, you know, have really worked hard to make sure that you are heading in that right direction.
Yeah, because the reality is I feel again, like I felt in the beginning, that I've dodged a bullet. So I'm going to continue to feel lucky, because otherwise, if I don't choose to feel positive, I think that could potentially, for me, set me on a very slippery slope. And the reality is that I need to maintain that level of positivity in order to survive 12 months to 12 months, because it's a long time to be on your own without that contact from your medical team. And you've got to live your life, haven't you?
Absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, normal activities are starting to resume, but you've still got the radiotherapy to go through.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that's going to entail?
It's really funny because when I went to see the oncologist on the 14th, I really wasn't anticipating talking very much about radiotherapy, because I was like, okay, well, that's just radiotherapy. I'd been quite dismissive about it. But actually, it's radiation.
Yeah, it's not pleasant. Yeah.
Well, it's not pleasant, but it's also, it's a much bigger deal than I thought. And I think it's because I was unsure of whether I was going to have chemotherapy or not, which for me, and I'm sure for most people, is your worst fear. Really, it was for me. Mastectomy included, I would have taken that, I think, better than the fear of having to go through chemotherapy. And once I knew I hadn't got to go through chemotherapy, I almost felt like, oh, radiotherapy, well, that's just for pretend cancer patients. That's not really, you know, that's not really hardcore, is it? And for once, I didn't want to be hardcore, but yeah. I think I'd dismissed how important it is or how potentially dangerous it can be. So they have to be incredibly precise with where they give you the radiotherapy. And the other day I had to go for a CT scan and a measuring appointment. So at that appointment, they scan you so that they can see inside the breast area where, because my surgeon will have left clips in the areas that he took the cancer from and the margin.
Physical clips?
Physical clips, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Markers.
Did you know that before? No,
I didn't know that, actually.
How interesting.
Yeah. But there are markers inside my breast from where he removed the cancer and the margin that then now communicate with the information that the radiographers need so that they can literally, within millimetres, direct the radiotherapy to that area and that area alone. Sorry, I should just add as well, one of the questions I asked early on, which was buzzing around my mind, is why they weren't doing radiotherapy to my armpit for this micrometastases, just to be on the safe side. And she said to me, she said that the consequences of doing radiotherapy there could potentially be really, really devastating. So it could induce a thing called lymphedema. Any messing around with your lymph node area could potentially have very significant consequences. So they don't like to mess with anything to do with your lymph nodes.
They just don't like to do it willy-nilly, do they?
Not at all willy-nilly, and certainly not to be belt and braces. They will only do that if they think that the benefit will outweigh the potential impact, which could be devastating. Because once you've got lymphedema, you can't get rid of it. And just so you know, lymphedema is water retention in the arm, and it's swelling, and it's really debilitating. So just to sort of circle back round to that. But anyway, so back to the radiotherapy and the clips. So that's why they're not doing it underneath my arm. They do the measuring appointment at the same time so that they can put you in a certain position with your arms behind your head. And they literally measure the distance of the arch of your back. They measure the distance between your points of your elbows. They measure the distance between your chin and your chest bone. They measure the distance between each nipple. I mean, it's so unbelievably precise, to within a millimetre, so that they can be absolutely sure they are targeting only that area that needs radiation.
Do they measure you lying down or sitting up?
Lying down!
Because your boobs, not yours, but boobs do tend to move when you're lying down.
It's lying down. Thank you, Heather. And they do still move underneath my armpits when that happens. So they measure you lying down in the position that you will assume for your radiotherapy. And they... obviously they want to avoid the radiotherapy going anywhere near your heart or your lungs if possible. But I mean, there are still risks associated with it, just hopefully not very many.
And what actually is it then?
It's radiation.
Right. So they just zap it into you.
Yes, they zap it. So you won't feel
anything.
It's
like having an X-ray.
It's exactly like having an X-ray. Yeah. So you don't feel anything in the moment, but it can cause you to feel tired afterwards. It can change the appearance of the area that they are giving you radiotherapy to. So it can make that area really dry. I've been told to stock up on moisturisers, which of course I have anyway, because I'm massaging that area every day. It can change the colour of the skin. So a friend of mine has said, in fact, two friends have said that the colour of their breast is slightly darker than it was after the radiotherapy. But again, these are all things that actually, when you bear in mind where I've come from and what the potential fallout could have been, I can absolutely cope with. One more thing. Sorry, radiotherapy. One more thing. There's this talk about the number of sessions. So I've been told that I need 5 sessions, and that more often than not, they will do a booster, which is another 5 sessions. Now, my oncologist has said that because my breasts are small, and the percentage of my breast that was removed is greater because my breast area is smaller than it would have been on, say, for example, a D-cup type person, they may not do the boost on me. And that is because they only like to do up to a third of the total breast area. And because my breast is so small, they really don't want to overzap it, because they might be over-treating it, and therefore the complications could potentially outweigh the benefits. So they're going to see whether... They will know by now, I imagine, because they will have looked at where the markers are, they will have made the calculations, and then
they'll have done all that based on all the stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that could be the reason that I don't have a boost. And she then obviously saw that I was neurotic. It's like, don't worry if we don't do a boost. Don't worry, it really is just to be on the safe side. But if we don't do it, don't panic. If we think you need it, we will absolutely do it. But don't panic if we don't.
Just don't panic. Right. So it sounds like that you do trust this oncologist.
She was amazing. She was fantastic. She really knew her stuff. And she couldn't have been more receptive, less patronising, more open to talking to me like a grown-up, which was fabulous. I don't think I've ever... In fact, throughout this entire experience, there hasn't been anybody that hasn't been super brilliant within that Derby Royal breast unit team, or now the oncology team. They are amazing.
That is wonderful. And I've only ever heard wonderful reports.
It's true.
About them.
They are amazing.
Excellent. Give them the pay rise they deserve then.
Absolutely. I personally would fund it with a little bit more tax. I really would. Yeah. They're amazing, and they deserve it.
So let's look forward then to what have we got? A date in the diary that...
We've got 2 dates. So the next date I've actually got is next Thursday, because I've had a few... I've been back to my GP and spoken to the breast unit. And in my left breast, I can feel a few lumps and things that I don't really know or recognise whether they're normal or not. And I've had a bit of an ache underneath my left armpit, where in my head, my perception is that that's where the sentinel lymph nodes are on that side. So this is the non-breast cancer side. So I've been back to the GP, who's now referred me back to the breast unit, just because they want to ultrasound it, just to be on the safe side that there's nothing we have missed on that side.
Your thoughts on that? Do you feel that there's something there, or do you feel that perhaps it could be hormonal with your, well, your medication?
I'm really hopeful that it's hormonal. The GP did an examination and said that she thought it was hormonal, but bear in mind that the GP last time thought that the cancer was actually a cyst. So I'm not trying to minimise their opinion, but they're not the experts and they know that. Hence why they've referred me back.
She's not messing around. She's not messing around, and that's ideally what you want, isn't it? That's exactly
what I want, because the reality is that after that appointment, from a breast unit point of view and a checking for cancer, unless I feel anything, I am then on my own for the full year.
Scary.
Yeah, a little bit scary. I feel like I will imagine I'm in no man's land a little bit. I've still got the radiotherapy to go, so that's the second appointment. That's on the 16th of March, so a couple of days, well, 3 days after my birthday.
Happy birthday! The thing is, it's relatively short, but it's still a long process, really, yes. Isn't it? You're going to have basically Marcus. Have special occasions that things are happening on.
Yeah, I mean, it's a long process, but it's not relatively a long process. I mean, most women are told 12 months. If you're lucky, you'll be done in 12 months. And if all goes according to plan and nothing is revealed next Thursday, actually, I was diagnosed on the 9th of November and my radiotherapy will be over by the 21st of March.
Pretty impressive, that, isn't it?
Yeah. They're amazing.
Very, very amazing.
I am seriously in awe.
Are you going to retrain, though?
I don't think they'd have me. I think I'm past my sell-by date for that. But, yeah, I love them.
Well, OK, so we will talk potentially after next Thursday.
Yes.
Potentially after the first radiotherapy as well.
You've just finished listening to episode 8 of A Lump in the Road. Thank you so much for sticking with us. It really is a privilege. If you are enjoying what you're hearing, then give us a 5-star review and hit subscribe so that you know when the next one has been released. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your week.